Hello, my name is Charles Lincoln. I'm talking to you today from Champs-Élysées Café on South Robertson, Beverly Hills. And my subject for today is to talk a little bit about what is too big, what is too ostentatious, and what is too grand and outdone, even for the city of Beverly Hills. I have in front of me today's November 28th Beverly Hills Courier, and on the second page is a notice of public hearing set for December the 11th, 2014, at 1:30, 4:55 North Rexford Drive, in case you want to come over, because they're going to be discussing whether to approve a house with two stories and a basement. Total square footage of 2,362 square feet and a height of 28 feet, including, in addition to that, pools, swimming pools, a cantilevered deck, retaining walls, and other water features. Anyhow, it's a gigantic structure to be built on Loma Linda, and even for Beverly Hills, a structure 11 to 12 times normal 2,000 square foot house requires a special hearing. On that same page, too, there's another one about historic preservation in Beverly Hills. I have become interested in this topic recently because I was hired as a consultant by one Dr. Michael Berlin to evaluate a much smaller scale structure on South Crescent in Beverly Hills, and it put me in direct contact with the City of Beverly Hills Planning Commission and their City Council and the Municipal Code concerning the construction of houses. And what I've learned is not terribly surprising. It is that with a little bit of money, you can get by with almost anything in this town. Wow, what a shock. This is, after all, Beverly Hills. But it's been interesting to see how much pretense there is in the city and even in the city code, but especially with the City Planning Commission, to pretend that that isn't so. There is an extremely elaborate style, architecture and style guide that you're supposed to follow if you want to build in the city. And then there's, in addition to this style guide, there's a tremendous code, section, an entire title of the Beverly Hills Municipal Code devoted to basically how you should, how houses can be built and how they should be the building of houses should be regulated. And what this does is this creates a fairly elaborate local bureaucracy in Beverly Hills, multiple departments, not just the Planning Commission, but there's also an urban planning department and a city planning, and there are various titled officers given presumably a lot of power. But what it comes down to is when people want to build a house, they get to select one out of two approval tracks. And these approval tracks basically are dialogue, provide for a dialogue between a builder and a city official, a group of city officials, about which regulations to follow. That's right, you heard it. They discuss which regulations to follow and how many exemptions they should get from city regulations. As you can imagine, what that really involves is how many bribes can be collected by city officials from builders to get exemptions and to get the selection of the proper regulations to be applied in a particular situation. Now, what was interesting about Dr. Michael Berlin's situation is on South Crescent, people think of Beverly Hills as, of course, this incredible super wealthy area, But the south part of Beverly Hills, the central part of Beverly Hills, traditionally was just a very lovely, quiet, middle class, upper middle class development of the 1920s and 1930s. Nothing super extravagant or super super luxurious at all. And Dr. Michael Berlin, a well-known international eye doctor, ophthalmologist, he has one of these old California-style bungalows. He likes to call it an hacienda-style bungalow because it's got Spanish tile in it and some, you know, curved arch doorways. But it's only a one-story building. It's not anything like an elaborate plantation home, or which is the English equivalent of an hacienda. It's a very nice, rambling, multi-room California bungalow. Perfect for the environment, not too big for the lot. And just very, very lovely, very comfortable, very quiet kind of home. And what happened to Dr. Berlin that was disturbing to him, and frankly to me, and I hope to you, is that right next door, some Iranian immigrants bought a lot, and they built, or in the process of building, they have completed now and are seeking approval for, a gigantic two-story house that takes up the entire lot, and in addition to that, is so big and so solid and so massive that it has changed the temperature. It's painted white, by the way. It has changed the temperature on Dr. Berlin's adjoining lot. It has raised the temperature, the summer temperature and the winter temperature, by an average of 10 degrees from what we can tell over last year. This is a fairly dramatic thing, and it affected Dr. Berlin's summer cooling bill substantially. He has central air. And he thinks that this is a terrible nuisance. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the concept of nuisance, nuisance isn't just about bothering somebody, you know, tapping them on the shoulder in class or something like that. Nuisance isn't even about harassment. Nuisance is about changing the environment as a matter of law and fact in a very localized way. Nuisance is the origin of all environmental law. All environmental law in the Anglo-American, if that matters, civil law, European, Latin American tradition, traces back to the idea of polluting air, polluting water, or even taking away sunlight. And the amazing thing about the house that was built next to Dr. Berlin is that it not only was so big that because the south wall gets the summer sun, it tended to heat up Dr. Berlin's house by 10 degrees, it also created a deprivation of light. So, I mean, at the same time, his property became darker and hotter, which is a pretty good image of hell, isn't it? And the city of Beverly Hills has basically approved this construction all the way through, ignoring Dr. Berlin's pleas and his entreaties to take some consideration for his traditional old-fashioned California lot and construction, which, in effect, they have destroyed. They have destroyed not only his pleasure of life, they have destroyed the value of the property, because under these circumstances, no one will ever buy his property. And so there are a million questions that come up. One is the Beverly Hills Planning Code, Municipal Planning Code, Chapter 10 of the Beverly Hills Municipal Code, is it of any value whatsoever? And the other is it so complex and so convoluted and so riddled with exemptions that, in effect, this code authorizes city bureaucrats to take people's private property, to destroy people's property without due process of law? And does that, in effect, amount to a tax and a wealth transfer between old residents and new construction in favor of new construction, especially big, ugly, styleless, two-story cracker box buildings, which are square, which is the only rectangular, which is the only way you can maximize space. And any number of violations of the code are permissible. All of this was originally brought to my attention by an old friend, Theodore Kyriatsis, who's actually of Greek origin, but he's been a realtor here in Beverly Hills for like 30 years. And he has seen the transformation of Beverly Hills from basically an all-WASP town to a largely Iranian, a largely Jewish community. And he thinks that this transition is somewhat staggering. And he notices that the Iranians basically are some of the most voracious capitalists, if you want to call them that, people who value all things material over any kind of style or value. And that this has wreaked a tremendous transformation on the personality of Beverly Hills as a place to live, as a neighborhood, as a quality of life. Anyhow, Theodore had introduced me to Dr. Berlin, and it's been an absolutely amazing project to delve into the transformation of a quiet, beautiful place into a congested, super materialistic, super intense money center, which is what Beverly Hills is becoming now, and it's sort of beyond description. This building that's on page two of the Courier is, of course, a lot bigger than the structure we're talking about on South Crescent, 430 and 434 South Crescent, but it's been a transformation all over Beverly Hills, and indeed all over Los Angeles. You hear about the concept of mansionization. And what does mansionization really mean? Mansionization is when all the good neighborhoods have been taken up with ordinary construction, and banks are looking to lend more money to stay in business, to keep the economy going, and builders are looking for new projects, and building out in the suburbs is not attractive to them. Mansionization is about taking normal homes and getting funding from banks, i.e. through the government, to turn them into small structures into gigantic structures, ordinary middle-class style living into super rich living. This is also, of course, a commentary on the transformation of America from a middle-class Anglo country to a super upper-class controlled elitist, elite-dominated foreign country. And that's what's interesting about Beverly Hills, sort of the icon of the American dream in Southern California, is being turned into basically this Iranian money pit is what it comes down to. They're using it as a mine to make themselves richer and put themselves on top of at least the West Los Angeles society, which as long as 20 years ago, there was a book called Irangelus about the dominant population in the dominant economic population in the city being Iranian. Kind of interesting. They seem to work with the Chinese very well. And anyhow, in my background as an archaeologist and historian, I just find the nature of settlement patterns, the nature of community architecture, and the nature of building in the city to be a particularly interesting project to work on, because in my past I was working on the construction and layout of ancient cities. And in today's Beverly Hills Courier, it's just amazing how many articles there are about this general theme of transformation. One on page 5, there's an article about sustainable landscaping, how to do gardening that isn't quite so water intensive, and so you can increase the population even more by not watering your plants too much. And let's see, okay, the farm home of Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, a 1929 mansion, is being restored and preserved as a historical monument. That's on page 10, and on that same page there, excuse me, there is a case before the California Supreme Court about gigantic constructions like that one I mentioned. In this one's actually in Bel Air, on top of the Bel Air Hills, California Hills, Hillside Division of Beverly Hills, the environmental impact of gigantic structures. This one's going to have a 50-foot high profile instead of a 28-foot high profile. And, you know, we just, you know, of course, this past year had been the centennial year of Beverly Hills. And so it's also interesting, this, the retrospective book that was just published by Robbie Anderson, Beverly Hills, the First 100 Years, and how this city came into existence as a fairly modest place. But what I find very interesting, and I just learned this year, 100th year of founding of Beverly Hills, was that the original name for this community was Morocco. So from the very beginning, there was this concept. It was going to be a North African, Middle Eastern, Islamic type of community. And it's sort of interesting how they abandoned that for a long time, and now we're going back to it. Maybe they'll rename it Morocco or Tehran or something. But all these things having been said, I think that for the audience outside of Beverly Hills, the most interesting thing to talk about is the transformation of class and of wealth in the United States. The 23,000 some odd square foot, 23,632 square foot home that they're talking about building on December 11th in Beverly Hills, that's, of course, it's not actually as big as the former home of Liz Taylor and Richard Burton. Let's see. That's called Carrollwood. And this article does not have a square footage on that one, so I'm not sure how many it is, but it certainly looks bigger than 23,000 to me, but you can't quite tell. Anyhow, there's some of you may have heard of the movie The Queen of Versailles that came out a couple of years ago about basically a former stripper from New York, upstate New York, who married the timeshare tycoon of Florida, and they decided to build the largest house ever, largest private home ever, 90,000 square feet. And they could never finish the house because the timeshare business went south. And what's interesting about the story of the Queen of Versailles, and is it relates exactly to what I said earlier about what's causing mansionization. Mansionization is a strategic maneuver on the part of the banks to create new business out of waste, in essence. A dear Italian friend of mine who lives in Mexico once described timeshare as the ultimate realization of every crook's dream, the fraudster's ultimate ambition to sell everything 2, 3, or 4 times instead of just once. Sometimes they do timeshares where you can buy 1 week units, there are 52 of those in a year. And anyhow, this the founder of Florida Timeshares had just perfected this particularly absurd form of property ownership and land ownership, marketing it to tourists, high-pressure marketing it to tourists. And, of course, because it was all based on funny money created by the banks to maximize their power, they gave him the credit he needed to build this, or begin to build this 90,000 square foot palace called Versailles. And is this an example of capitalism, or is this an example of something else? A lot of critics will, I think, somewhat ignorantly say that greed and materialism is synonymous with capitalism. I think that if we look at the history of the Soviet Union, the 74-year experiment in Russia came collapsing down with the Berlin Wall in 89, existed 1917 to 1990, roughly. We'll see that communism did nothing to eliminate human greed or abuse. It simply redefined the ways in which the elite could be created, the elite could acquire power, and it was through conformity and cooperation in politics. And I think that that's really where we're headed in this country. And I think that that's what we see both in Beverly Hills and in other episodes of mansionization, or the creation of astounding boondoggles like Versailles in Florida. If you look up The Queen of Versailles, if you haven't seen it, it's just a truly horrifying movie about what constitutes modern wealth and what constitutes the most nouveau of nouveau riche, and really the most degenerate use of materialism as a cover for what one might call capitalism in the history of the world. I have to say that I think that all these things come together in a very interesting way with regulation, government regulation, increasing the cost of everything merely by increasing the time of discussion and transaction, and that does not protect anybody. And that's what the regulations in Beverly Hills do. They merely increase the time that is necessary to spend on a project by talking, not by creating, not by doing anything of any importance, not by protecting the neighbors. Well, not certainly didn't protect Dr. Michael Berlin. And all of these things are ways of increasing value through transaction costs, which is pure Marxism, because the Marxist theory of value, of course, is that every time you have a new value added, you can the VAT, the value-added tax, is one of the favorite Marxist taxes after the income tax. And the value-added tax permits you to tax every improvement created by a transaction, and a transaction is basically a negotiation or discussion about property. And, of course, the paying people to do this negotiation is a tremendous form of welfare in itself. The city of Beverly Hills, we might not think of it as a welfare place, but it certainly created a huge number of... Sorry, that was a Beverly Hills fire truck going by. Anyhow, the Beverly Hills... City of Beverly Hills has certainly created a gigantic bureaucracy that does little or nothing besides talk to people and collect their money and make them pay their architects more, their engineers more, their landscape designers more, increases the transaction costs of building, and there's no ultimate real value added. There's no quality increase. There's just a conversational increase. And turning words into money, of course, as I guess that's another part of the American dream. But it has to be done through a cooperation between banks and the government. Regulation and funding of compliance with regulation. So, I think that we have just a tremendous opportunity right now to investigate all this, to learn about it. The city of Beverly Hills is very good about having meetings. The city council meetings are quite entertaining, and so are the planning council meetings. And I recommend to anyone interested in the structuring or restructuring of class and wealth in America to come by and attend some of these hearings or meetings, all of which are published online, and get to know what's happening at the apex of society, at least the wealth apex of society. I wouldn't call it the intellectual apex of society necessarily. And that, of course, opens a whole different kind of discussion about the profitable uses of wealth or status of Beverly Hills, which is why not improve the intellectual quality of society. In recent issues of the Beverly Hills Courier, it has been revealed, for example, that the $10 million endowment of Beverly Hills High School has been whittled down since year 2000 to a mere $2.5 million. $2.5 million is still more than most high schools have by way of an investment endowment, but one wonders what they have done with the endowment during that time period. At one of the Beverly Hills city council meetings I attended, they were talking about how they needed to fund $2 million worth of security at Beverly Hills High School. And this, again, goes to sort of the use of government propaganda to create wealth for somebody, but in a strange way, to transform society in a very sinister and, I think, a very unattractive way. High school, as we all know, is the transformative event in every American's life. It's basically where people form their identities and shape their personalities for the rest of their lives. And the fact that this is a very traumatic experience is, I think, why we have such a huge number of movies focusing on high school as compared with almost any other four-year stage of human existence in the lifespan. Many more high school movies and popular culture themes than, say, college. Never mind anything after college, never mind the Army or the Navy or anything like that. Those Army and Navy movies, I guess, were popular after World War II, but they've sort of vanished along the wayside. But maybe they'll reappear once the Beverly Hills City Council implements its plan for Beverly Hills High School, which is to turn it into a fortified prison, basically. Prison is my word, not theirs, of course, but they want to do the following. They want to spend the following. They want to build a wall around Beverly Hills High School and every school in Beverly Hills, as a matter of fact. They want to build a wall around every school in Beverly Hills, which is higher than the walls around the White House in Washington, where it was noted someone actually was able to scale the walls a couple of months ago. And they said this with some terror and horror in their eyes. We must make our schools more secure than the White House. Now, of course, walls are a symbol of power, right, in castles and in forts. But I'm guessing that for 99.9% of the students, the building of walls is going to realize their worst fears, that school really is just a jail to which they are being sentenced for 13 years, K through 12 at the very least. Some people now talk about K through 14 education, including 2 years of college, community college, that sort of thing. K through 12 or K through 14 behind walls. Oh, and that's not it, of course. They're not just going to build walls around all the schools in Beverly Hills. They're going to have armed guards everywhere on campus. There's no way that this is not going to turn Beverly Hills, which is, of course, a trendsetter and a style setter for the rest of the United States. Beverly Hills is transforming its schools into prisons. Armed guards, walled. They were talking about possibly electrified barbed wire on the top of the fences to make sure no one could get in. And no one was saying, how is this going to make the kids feel? Well, I think everyone can imagine how it's going to make the kids feel, how it's going to make the... There is no academic freedom in prison, and there is no academic freedom behind walls where if you make a mistake of any kind, the armed guards are there to act as peacekeepers, to restore order. Of course, the Hunger Games Part 3 started last week, and it was really interesting to see the evolution of Suzanne Collins' point about how the rebel society is in some ways even more repressive, more uniformitarian, more demanding of conformity than the society of the capital, which is due to be overthrown, and in some ways just as corrupt. It is all about the modern world we live in. It is all about turning the beauty of the American dream of freedom into the prison planet that Alex Jones has been talking about for some years now. I think we need desperately to start being more politically aware and politically active as a people. We need to attend our city council meetings. I can't guarantee that they'll all be as interesting or as eventful as those in Beverly Hills, but I invite you to come over to Beverly Hills for a visit and experience the luxury of talking about turning schools into prisons visually as well as psychologically. I think a lot of us can relate to the notion that school was like prison even without walls and armed guards. But how does all this relate to Manchinization and the crowning victory of the banks in determining what gets built and what gets destroyed? In the case of destruction, we're talking about the entire modest middle class way of life. In terms of construction, we're talking about something that can only happen from the outside, because there's not really enough in the way of American economic activity to create it from inside. We are trying to create a new world of wealth and power that, I guess, seems very homey and sympathetic to Iranians who came from the Shah's despotic dictatorship, which, by the way, was set up by the British and Americans in the 1950s. The Salak was the famous secret police of the Shah's time in office, and that is the really interesting feature of bringing these foreigners into the country and transforming America that way, is we are importing values which we helped create in the Third World by funding despotism such as the Shah's, and we are bringing that back home and putting the elites that we created elsewhere in charge of the United States. And you know, the idea, you look at the pictures, and the pictures of the beautiful people in Beverly Hills is still very much an image of, you know, blonde, white attractiveness. But these are not the people who sit on the planning commission and the assistant mayor's office and all the people, the city manager's office, and all the people who wield actual power in the city. It is the Iranians, and in particular Iranian Jews, who are now at the top of the apex of socioeconomic and political power in the city of Los Angeles, as exemplified through Beverly Hills. And what does this tell us? I think it tells us that the banks in particular, and one can't really be more specific than that, saying the banks and the bank, those who formulate banking policy, want to see a transformation in this country in favor of manipulable rather than fixed and established wealth. Manipulable in the sense that wealth is extended by credit rather than as a result for production. It is extended as a result of political and social conformity rather than any other sort of merit. And conformity and merit and conformity are defined entirely in terms of working in part of a single quasi-organic, quasi-mechanical system that controls every aspect of human life. And that, I think, is what we need to see about the relationship between the mansionization of West Los Angeles, Beverly Hills in particular, West Los Angeles in general, mansionization combined with the opposite of that, which is the replacement of single-family homes with multi-unit apartment buildings. That's what's happening in Santa Monica and a lot of the coastal properties. They aren't going towards mansionization at all. They're going towards multi-family dwellings. And so at the top of the social hierarchy, we see mansionization and the increase of the stature of the elite. At the other end of society, we see the abolition of single-family homes, the abolition of even modest duplexes or triplexes, and the replacement of those structures with gigantic multi-family dwellings, so that the rich are getting richer with bigger and more powerful homes, while the middle class are getting poorer and poorer and being confined to smaller and smaller places. But in effect, everything is available only through credit, both rich, as exemplified by the timeshare king of Versailles and his project in Florida, and the two different tendencies in construction in Los Angeles, the one towards bigger and bigger and bigger, the other towards smaller and smaller and more, and the abolition of the middle, the nice, comfortable single-family homes, which were once absolutely definitive of Los Angeles as the all-American city of the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. This is a tragedy, I think. We are losing the middle class completely, and our government and the banks are helping push it out of existence. This, in my view, is cause for great concern, and the place to address all of these complaints is in the political arena, especially at the top. So, that is my big message for the day. I am hoping that someone who's listening would like to follow up on Michael Berlin's complaints about the form and structure of the Beverly Hills Planning Code and its analogy in Los Angeles. I think there are severe constitutional and legal problems with the way that nuisances are created to transform the environment and to, by the environment, I mean not only the social environment, comparing single-story bungalows with gigantic two-story McMansions, call them, because they're all sort of mass-produced like McDonald's food. McMansions, one after the other. And then the corollary, which is, as wealth accumulates at the top, yes, I guess they do need to be more worried about terrorism and social unrest. So they say they're protecting from foreign enemies, but I'm guessing it's actually all about protecting from the lower classes who are being taken, having their single-family dwellings taken away and being pushed into multifamily dwellings. That is why they need walls around all the high schools of Beverly Hills. That's why they're going to need armed guards in all the schools of Beverly Hills. It is to maintain the social hierarchy and maintain acceptance of government and bank-enforced, bank-created inequality. So, I think that we must be coming fairly close to a terminus point here. I'm running out of breath and voice, as it happens. So I think that I'm going to say that we should wrap it up here at this point, and I will hope to be back with you soon again for another installment. But I do invite everybody to come to the December 11th, 2014 Planning Commission hearing, room 280A, Beverly Hills City Hall, 455 North Rexford Drive, Beverly Hills, California, in the famous zip code 90210, on December 11th at 1:30 p.m., because I think that some interesting things are going to be happening. And this is Charles Lincoln signing off from Beverly Hills.